Welcome to the Upgrading Democracy podcast, which is about an actionable idea how we can make our political systems work better for us. In this episode, we take a look at the representative democracy and its weaknesses. After all, we want to create a better system, so we have to know why the old one is failing us. And here we go. We all long for a political party that truly listens, that doesn't ignore our input when taking decisions, that tells us the truth instead of picking the facts that fit into the narrative, that focuses to implement the solution that is best for all of us and not just an influential minority. We are tired of partisan tactics. We are tired of the political show, which is basically focused on itself instead of solving our problems, which creates noise and apathy. We long for a party that builds up and improves the institutions of our democracy instead of dismantling trust in them by using its loopholes. We are tired of politicians and parties that run behind the problems of yesterday and don't seem to be able to solve the problems of today or prevent the problems of tomorrow. We feel that pure representative democracy is simply not up to the task anymore. I see three major reasons why this feeling is not just a feeling, but an actual constructional weakness that can't be overcome by some simple tweaks to the system. First, the political system is outdated and hands over power to politicians for 4 or even more years on a very vague basis. Second, the internal structures of political parties are mostly far from democratic. Third, the power structure within the political system is heavily biased towards influential groups with money. These groups have a decisive influence on politicians and legislation. Okay, now to reason number one. Handing over a blank check to an untrustworthy professional. You are not your party. A party's program can't match your will by 100%. As the saying goes, if everyone is thinking alike, then no one is thinking. Either you have given up thinking for yourself, or don't dare to differ as the group pressure is too strong. Either way is not healthy. Guess what? The government didn't tell you all things it will be doing in its election program, as including all political issues in an election program is impossible. Even if it was possible, no voter would read multi-volume works, much less those of several parties. The statements made by parties in the election program are limited to only a few main subject areas. For the rest, the voter has to trust his preferred party. As you might have already recognized, during the election, they promise us a lot, but do not keep a lot of their promises when they are elected. Is there any recourse if they don't keep their promises? No. In addition, they spend a lot of money on things we wouldn't have approved if we were asked. Okay, reason number two. Dependency of representatives towards party officials. Constitutions normally state that the representative represents all people and is not bound by orders and instructions. His decisions are only subject to his conscience. But this is far from reality. There is a submission of the representative to his party. The primary tool of power is the support of the party officials during the next election, especially the assignment as direct candidate or list candidate. If this is withdrawn, the representative will very likely lose his seat in parliament. It is clear, as long as this influence isn't broken, we will not have strong candidates for the people, but those of the party's liking. As the representative's number one goal is to keep his seat in parliament, he will obey the will of the party officials and vote accordingly. He just has to compromise on his conscience, or at least convince himself that all decisions of his party are simply flawless, and indeed the very best for the nation, always. This dependency of representatives to their party is one of the major weaknesses of pure representative democracy. It often results in a selection of the best adapted rather than best candidates for politics. It is a feudal system that is characterized by the principle exchange of privileges for loyalty, with no good result for us. Okay, coming to reason three. The power structure within the political system is heavily biased towards influential groups with money. Many political topics are complicated and complex. As a party, you need external expertise. But where do the preparatory documents and information come from that the representatives receive? These are commissioned by the party leadership to their liking or are prepared in panels and committees. So let us think, a few people prepare the decision documents that all of the party representatives will kind of blindly vote on later. Sounds like a power concentration and a perfect target for influence by influencer groups. And indeed, this is one of the major weaknesses of parliamentary democracy. Many organizations rightly criticize that the representatives are much more likely to meet with lobbyists than the representatives of citizen initiatives or NGOs. It is also criticized that there is almost always a lack of transparency with whom the representatives meet to educate themselves about the topic. Benefits handed to representatives during their time in parliament or after are problematic, as these can influence their decisions. In weak democracies, where political groups are allowed to massively fund candidates, they have a very direct influence on the selection of the candidates and their chances to get elected. For a good reason, they are also called money primaries. The system works well for all parties involved, for representatives and lobbyists, and for influencer groups with money. Let's take a look at numbers from the Premier League, in which corruption is basically made legal. According to Vox, half of retiring US senators and a third of retiring House members register as lobbyists. This vividly reveals the sellout of US democracy. The reason why representatives turn lobbyists is simple. According to a video from Represent Us, the average raise for the new lobbyist is 1,452%. So 13.5 additional paychecks. Lucrative. And there's just one way to say thank you, dear representative. Thank you for giving us the taxpayers' money, subsidies, grants, loans, we love them all. Thank you for purchasing from us as public sector. Thank you for the appointment of persons for positions in state or state-controlled enterprises or organizations who then will be able to better influence decisions in our favor. Thank you for setting up obstacles for new competitors, laws, directives, regulations, we love them all. Thank you for creating a legal framework that favors us. And thank you very much for the many tax loopholes. We just love them. And thank you so much for declaring us too big to fail and bailing us out, buddy, when we lost too many chips at the poker table. Thank you very much, dear representative, for taking care of us. But does this pay off for the interest group that employ these expensive lobbyists? Oh, yes, it does. Once again, the Premier League of Corruption in the US, a study by the University of Arkansas, found that the interest groups receive back $220 for every dollar they spend on lobbying. Quite a bang for the lobby buck. And the interesting thing, mostly they don't have to get a new bill through, but only block a change or prevent it in the first place. As U.S. Senator Michael Bennett said in an interview on the podcast Another Way from Equal Citizens. You want to know why Congress can't get anything done in the works of Citizens United? It's because politicians are fearful that if they do something, let's say have a floor speech on climate or join a bill on climate, that the billionaires will say, well, if you're going to do that, we are going to spend $30 million in your primary election. And then everybody backs off. And over the 10-year period that I have been there, you know, you don't have to see the money to know that it's there. They don't even have to spend the money they threatened with. And that's why it becomes a corruption of inaction. So, it is simply not enough to create a new party. If the system stays the same, the results will also stay the same. Representative democracy has to be complemented by direct democratic instruments and influence. We need a direct democratic corrective. So, what to do? Found a grassroots democratic party and let the people decide how their representatives should vote in parliament? Put all input papers for the legislative decisions in an app and make it widely available and let the people decide? Well, yes and no. This is not as simple as it seems. There are some challenges to this approach. First, judging from the past, grassroots democratic and effectiveness and efficiency don't go well together. Discussing and deciding everything with every member takes long and might lead to a party majorly occupied with itself instead of being helpful. Second, the party representatives might not be able to decide themselves, but the party officials can still heavily influence the decisions via the selection of the experts or the information which is used as basis for the decision. Third, only few members will have the time and will be motivated to read all the official documents before voting on them. Given this, how do you ensure a well-educated decision by the member base? Fourth, large players with money would only shift their focus from influencing representatives via lobbyists to influencing the party members via mass media and social media. And fifth, you need to ask yourself, is the new breed of political party really more representative than the current parties and also more trustworthy? A lot of questions. All of them will be answered in this podcast. In the next episode, I will deliver a sketch of a new breed of political party that I see as the best implementable next step to upgrade democracy. So, come with me, hit subscribe wherever you listen to this podcast.